This talk is brought to you by FOCUS, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. Building the Culture of Life by Lila Rose.
Today we have with us a very inspirational young lady. Her name is Lila Rose, and she's a student activist at UCLA who has dedicated herself to building a culture of life and ending abortion. At age 15, Lila founded Live Action, which is now a growing nonprofit, which uses new media to educate the public with several chapters in California. Lila has also launched several successful undercover investigations exposing racism, statutory rape cover-up, and manipulative counseling at Planned Parenthood. Her brave work has revealed new evidence to build a strong case against the abortion industry and lobby. She is also an international pro-life speaker and frequent guest on television and radio programs. Please welcome this inspirational young lady, Lila Rose.
Good afternoon, everyone. How are you all doing? Good. Awesome conference. This is my first FOCUS, and the taste of it so far has been really good. So I am here because for two reasons. First of all, because I want to share with you some of the things that I have seen in abortion clinics across the country. And together, we can look at abortion for what it is, face the truth for what it is, and lead our country away from death and back into life. The other thing, though, is I'm also a student like you. I'm a senior at UCLA. Go Bruins! Any Bruins out there? No. Well, go Bruins anyways, and I'm also a new Catholic. I was received into the church this past March 15th. So, woo! And as many of you may be experiencing or have experienced, as I've become Catholic, other friends around me are considering, and just last year another friend became Catholic, so it's the church is getting full. More people are coming in. Praise God. But a place to start my story would be just a few months ago, back in the springtime. It was a beautiful summer day in Los Angeles. I was at a church, a parish at UCLA, near to UCLA, giving a pro-life talk. And in the middle of my talk, this woman walked in, like very tall, thin, blonde woman. You know, you see a lot of these in Los Angeles. And she's holding this little dog, and she walks into the back of the room, and she leans against the wall and looks at me like she doesn't like what I'm saying. And I remember thinking, maybe her car broke down or something bad happened to her. You know, she's late. Well, anyways, I'll just keep giving my little talk. So after I was done talking, she came up to me, and she put out her arm, and she shook my hand, and she said that she was a member of the board of Planned Parenthood National, and that she had heard me, that I was going to be speaking, and she had to stop by. And I said, oh, nice to meet you, because as many of you know, Planned Parenthood is the nation's largest abortion clinic. They do over 300,000 abortions a year. They kill more unborn children than any other business in the United States. And I said, you know, nice to meet you. And she said, I have to give you some advice, because I think you have a future ahead of you, but no one will take you seriously if you don't listen to this advice. And I said, okay, well, what is that? And she said, don't say pro-abortion. Say pro-choice. Because I've been saying pro-abortion in my talk. And I said, okay, well, what's so wrong about saying pro-abortion? What's so wrong with abortion? And she said, it's just a very hard decision, that's why. It's just offensive, that's why. And I said, well, why is abortion offensive? And she said, well, it's just a very hard decision, that's why I say pro-choice. And I said, well, what's so hard to decide about abortion? And she said, it just is. And we went in circles a few times, and I quickly realized that no matter how many times I asked the question, what's so wrong with abortion, she would never be able to answer. Because if this board member of Planned Parenthood looked at this question and answered it, she'd be looking straight on her entire life's contradiction. That while she was advocating for women and the rights of women, women's freedom, she was also advocating for the killing of millions of tiny women, little women in the womb every year, and millions of tiny little men. I hope and I pray for this woman that someday she'll face head on the truth about abortion, and that she'll see it for what it is, and that she'll leave Planned Parenthood, she'll leave the abortion business, and become part of the culture of life. And there's hope for her, and there's hope for anyone, because has anyone heard of Abby Johnson from Texas? Go Abby! Abby was the director of a Planned Parenthood abortion clinic in Texas. For over 5 years, she worked there. And just a couple months ago, she left and returned to the Catholic faith, actually, but she left the clinic saying that she couldn't be a part of it anymore. She couldn't be a part of selling abortions, exploiting women, and killing innocent human beings, but she had to leave. I pray, and if we pray, there will be many more Abbeys, and there will be many more people that leave the abortion business, the industry, the way of life, and come to the culture of life. What is Planned Parenthood? What's so bad about Planned Parenthood? Well, Planned Parenthood, I'm very familiar with because they are the biggest abortion business in the nation. They do more abortions than any other business. Not only that, but they're the biggest political proponent, the biggest lobbyist group in the United States, and working feverishly abroad in Latin American countries, in African nations, to export the abortion ideology, to send abortion and create abortion clinics and abortion rights in other countries. That's why they are such a formidable foe in the United States. And by the way, as they do this work, their money not only comes from doing abortions, but their money comes from our federal government, and from state and local governments. So they're being propped up by tax money of people that might even be pro-life to do this work, to export abortion. That wasn't the first time I'd interacted with Planned Parenthood when I talked to this board member. The reason that she came up to me is because of investigative work that I've been involved in for the past 3, now even 4 years. My freshman year at UCLA, I was a college freshman, I was involved in the pro-life group, I'd been pro-life for a long time, but I had been doing a lot of research about abortion, and many of you might be familiar with different issues, but I found some really startling things as I did this research. For instance, I found a study from 2002 where they did a series of phone calls to abortion clinics, and they had an actor pose as a 13-year-old girl on these phone calls, and she told the abortionist on the other line, or the counselor, you know, I'm only 13, what do I do? Basically reporting her pregnancy from a much older man, a situation of statutory rape or sexual abuse. And in 91% of the clinics, over 800 clinics that this project called, they found that the Planned Parenthood employee said, we don't care. We don't want to know. Just come in for the secret abortion. We won't report it to Child Protective Services or to parents like we're required by the law to do so. Just come in for the abortion and no one will ever know. So being a college freshman and reading about some of this work, I wanted to find out, was it really happening in clinics near me? Could I get this on tape, possibly? Is there a way to document this in a visual way? Because I don't know about you, but I am on YouTube and Facebook a lot, sometimes too much, and people watch YouTube more than TV, some people say, and Hulu.com and everything. The internet is a way to reach people. Videos now, there's a democracy here because we can put up videos that the mainstream media won't censor. So I was thinking maybe we could get video footage of some of these abuses that I've been reading about, these things. So with my friend James O'Keefe. Has anyone heard of ACORN, of the ACORN scandal? Yes, that was James. James did this undercover investigation into ACORN, exposing abuse. Anyways, he made Time's top 9 scandal list, I think, of the year. But my first investigation I did with him, we went to a Planned Parenthood clinic just 5 miles away from my dorm, my college dorm, and I put an old camcorder. We've gotten a little more professional since then with police quality undercover equipment and things like that. But at the time, it was an old camcorder and an audio recorder in my purse, and I decided to pose as a 15-year-old girl and to go into the clinic and see what they would tell me, what they would say when I told them that my boyfriend was much older, and what would they do for me. So I went to this abortion clinic. It's on 3rd Street, which is this beautiful area in Los Angeles. Has anyone been in their 3rd Street promenade? It's right up to the ocean. We've got one. Lots of nice shops. Girls, if you're ever in LA, you'll want to go here. There's great places to go. It's really pretty. But right above the Pete's Coffee Shop, in one of the 2-story buildings, is a Planned Parenthood surgical abortion clinic. They're doing abortions there while people shop. And I went there, it was 5 miles away from school, walked up into the elevator, went up to the 2nd floor. The elevator opened, and I remember being startled. I'm dressed up as a little 15-year-old, but being startled looking in onto this clinic at all the women sitting in the waiting room. Some of them looking very sad, one of them looking about to cry, some of them looking aimlessly at magazines or at the television that was blaring, waiting for their abortion appointments. And I remember looking at these women and thinking that when I looked at them, I wasn't just looking at one life, but I was looking at two lives. And on that day, one of those lives was scheduled to be aborted, to be killed. And on the wall of the clinic, it said Esperanza, or hope in Spanish. And I remember thinking, this must be the most hopeless place in all of Los Angeles. So I buzzed the door to get into the waiting room to talk to the clinician standing at the counter, the waiting room. And I walked up to the counter and I said, I'm 15, can I talk to somebody? And she must have known what I was up to. She must have seen a lot of young girls coming in, because she said, oh yeah, just wait a second. And then she invited me behind the counter and she said, okay, what's going on? And I said, well, I'm only 15 and he's a lot older. What do I do? Any teacher or health professional is required by law to take this seriously, to ask follow-up questions, to make a report ultimately. This is abuse. This is unhealthy. But instead she said, oh, okay. I said, he's 24. What do I do? She said, just figure out a birth date that works on the paperwork. Lie on the paperwork. Say you're older than you really are. No one will know about this boy, this man, and no one will know about your secret abortion. That was my first bit of advice at a Planned Parenthood clinic, instructing me to break the law ultimately, to lie about my age so that they wouldn't have to report it. That wasn't the first clinic we went to that day. At the second clinic, it got even worse. I went and down and sat with the manager here. Not only did she not blink an eye about the age difference, didn't care, said she'd, bypass the law, get the secret abortion, but she gave me her advice. And this is the standard counseling. This is a taste of the counseling that Planned Parenthood says gives to millions of women in America, because they serve millions of women, they counsel millions of women to make appropriate choices about their health. This is the sort of thing they're saying. So I sat down and she gave me her advice. She said, you know what, when I was 15, I got pregnant. And I said, oh, really? Because I'm in there as a 15-year-old pregnant girl. I said, really? Well, what did you do? And she said, well, I had my baby. And I remember thinking, oh my gosh, she's undercover too, pro-life counseling at Planned Parenthood. And I said, really? I didn't say that, but I said, really? Well, do you regret it? And she said, you know what? If I could do it again, I would do it very differently. If I could do it again, I would not continue the pregnancy. And I have two kids now, 16 and 17. That was the advice at the second clinic. The first clinic, break the law, lie about your age. The second clinic, I wish I had aborted my baby, my son, who's now 16 or 17. I wish I could go back in time and I wish I had aborted him. Those being my first tastes of abortion clinics, knowing what was happening, getting that footage, getting that evidence, there was a bug in me and in some of the students that I worked with to get more evidence, to reveal, to expose that. And we put those evidence up on YouTube, and Planned Parenthood found out that they started getting hundreds, dozens of thousands of views in just a few days, and they started going viral. And Planned Parenthood, when they found out that there were videos of their law breaking on the internet that they could not censor because they couldn't call up CNN like they can right now and say, hey, CNN, why are you running that negative story on us? Please take it off. And CNN says, sure, will do. I mean, that's the bias in the media. You don't see negative things about abortionists in the media, on television. You don't see it, but you might see it on YouTube. So when they saw that these videos were up on YouTube, they sent me a letter, and I remember checking my email one morning at school at my desk, and I remember getting an email from Planned Parenthood. And I opened it, and it said, Dear Miss Rose, we have recently become aware of these videos that you posted on YouTube.com, and they violate our privacy. And ultimately, if you do not take them down off of YouTube and surrender the full tapes to us, we are going to hold you liable for $5,000 for each offense and et cetera, et cetera. A lawsuit, something threatening to sue me. And I remember thinking, I don't have more than $5,000. I don't have more than $500 in my bank account right now. But thinking beyond that, this is great. They're afraid. They're afraid to the extent they're going to come after a college student because of these videos. And that was just the beginning. Since then, the threat of the lawsuit, praise be to God, God used for good, because it got more media attention onto those videos, spotlighting those videos, and they ultimately dropped it because they didn't really have a leg to stand on. But at the end of the day, Planned Parenthood decided to do something else, and now when I go into abortion clinics undercover, I guess you could say I'm flattered to see my photo on the wall, like a warning poster. And And don't tell them this. Don't tell Planned Parenthood this. And if they're in the room, well, I guess they'll find out now. But their poster says last seen in Florida. And this is the first time I've been to Florida, which is, it's a beautiful state, but it's the first time. So they're a little off in their information. And we are actually, a couple years ago, we were doing another project, and I had to bleach my hair blonde to continue to go undercover because they had the brunette photo up. And we were there just a couple months ago at another clinic for another project, and they have the brunette picture up and the blonde picture up. So they're catching on. I'm thinking of going red next. But if anybody has any ideas, let me know about disguises. The good news is I get to work with a growing team of some of the most wonderful young people, young professionals, high school and college students from across the country. So I'm not alone in this work, in doing investigative work. There are other people that are capable, that are willing. A small group, but it's growing, and that have become some of my best friends. So a little shout out, if anyone's interested, let me know afterwards, because we're building our team. But in all of this, why are we so focused on this issue? I know some of you might be really pro-life, or some of you might be I'm pro-life, but yeah, I'm more interested in something else. You know, it's not really my cause, my calling. It's my life's mission to end abortion. I'm 21 years old, but ever since I was 13 or 14, I wanted to end abortion. And it wasn't because of some divine inspiration from God. And I don't think many pro-lifers have a special inspiration that other people don't have. But instead, it's because when I look at the abortion issue, I think this is not just another issue. Is there an injustice in the world today that kills more people than abortion? Is there something in the world today that causes more innocent bloodshed than abortion? I will switch issues to another human rights cause if someone can show me a different issue that causes more killing, that destroys the image of God more times than abortion. But there isn't, because the greatest destroyer of human life, the greatest amount of bloodshed in the world today, is because of our nation's and our world's addiction to abortion. That is why this is the greatest cause of our day, and everyone has a part to play in ending it once and for all in our great country. We all have something to do. When I was 9 years old, this all became clear to me first, or began to start coming clear to me when I was nine. I was really young. I was homeschooled. Any homeschoolers out there? Yay! We're not weird. Homeschoolers are great. When I was nine, I was looking around the house for a book to read. I guess, yeah, I was a nerd. And I wanted to, you know, find something new, something interesting. And I found this book on the bottom of a shelf in the living room called A Handbook on Abortion by Dr. and Mrs. Wilkie. And it looked like it was from the 1980s. This guy had like kind of longish hair on the front, and I thought, okay, you know, this might be interesting. So I opened it up, and it fell to the middle where there were photos. And I remember looking at this image in horror and closing the book quickly and pushing it away. And then I took the book in curiosity again, and I opened it up again, and I looked. And what I was looking at was the image of a tiny aborted child, maybe 10 weeks old, with little hands and feet that had become the victim of abortion. And I remember thinking, as a little 9-year-old, how could anybody do that to a baby? Is that real? Is that really happening? So I went to my mom and I said, Mom, is this, look at this. And she closed the book and she said, that's abortion. And that was my first exposure to abortion. Emmett Till was a boy, and this story shows the power and importance of unveiling abortion, of showing those images, of looking and facing abortion head on. Emmett Till was a boy in 1955, 13 years old at the time, and this is a story that in large part gave rise, many social historians says, gave rise to the civil rights movement, inspired people like Martin Luther King Jr. But Emmett was 13 years old. He was visiting his cousins in the Deep South, and when he was playing one day outside a convenience store, there was a woman there, a white woman behind the counter, and maybe he bought some candy or gum from her, but later on, he was accused of whistling at her by white men in the town. So 2 days later, when Emmett was sleeping in his uncle's home with his cousins, a group of white men kidnapped him in the middle of the night and took him out to a shed in the rural area. There, they beat Emmett so badly, he was beyond recognition. They punched his nose up into his face, they gouged out his eye, they strangled him, and then they left him to die in a nearby creek. Well, when Emmett's mother found out about this, so totally grieved, she asked for the body of her little son. And she said, send me my son's body. I want his body. And media started buzzing about this, and people started finding out about this. And the coroner sent the body, the uncle had the body sent to his sister, Emmett's mother, closed casket, with the casket nailed shut. But when Emmett's mother got the casket, she opened it up to look at the image of her son beyond recognition. And then she decided to do something. She decided to hold a public funeral and to invite the media, photojournalists, the public, everyone to this funeral for her son's death. And Mrs. Till decided to leave little Emmett's coffin open so that everybody who came by would have to look at her son. And people said to her, even close to her, they said, Mrs. Till, okay, what are you thinking? This is disrespectful to the dead. Why are you showing him? You should put a white sheet over him. Why are you doing this? And others said, this is controversial. You're going to cause more violence. You're going to make blacks go kill whites now. And they told her, what are you doing? But she said, I want the whole world to see what happened to my little Emmett. And she inspired a movement because photojournalists took those photos. And you can see them online. They're all over the internet, and they were all over the newspapers. And hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people, looked at the photo of little Emmett. In the same way, we want the world to see what is happening to those little babies. We want to pull back the casket that has been nailed shut on abortion. Abortionists don't want women to know that they're killing a baby. They don't want college students and high school students and people in the public to know that these are human beings and that when they're killed, you can see a little dead body with little hands and feet often. They don't want us to know that. So they hide that and they use euphemisms. They use scientific words like embryo and fetus or clump of cells, blob of tissues to hide them, to make them unhuman, to dehumanize them. These aren't human beings like you or I. And they have succeeded in large part. There are 1.2 million abortions every year. That's over 3,000 every day. Almost every 25 seconds, that's about another abortion. Every 25 seconds. Well, Martin Luther King Jr., like I said, was inspired in part by Emmett's story and angered by Emmett's story and wanted to make a difference. So using peaceful protests, he went into the deep south. He did sit-ins. He would do marches. He would do these civil disobedience to try to stand up against the laws that were segregating blacks from whites, these unjust laws. Well, he was thrown into jail. And when he was in jail, he wrote a letter from a Birmingham jail. Everyone might be familiar with this. You might have had to read it for history class. And in this letter, he's responding to people that told him, you know, you're too controversial, Emmett. I mean, too controversial, Martin Luther King Jr. You're causing riots in the streets. You're causing problems. You should really do this more. The civil disobedience thing is really, it's really uncivil, actually. I don't think you should be doing it. Well, he wrote them back and he said in his letter from a Birmingham jail, the world is in dire need of creative extremists, because they called him an extremist. And let me tell you, Planned Parenthood loves to call us extremists. And you might even have been called an extremist for one thing or another, or a religious fanatic, or some term. But Martin Luther King Jr. is saying, the world's in dire need of creative extremists. And today, it's just as true as it was then, even more true. Because it is extreme, it maybe seem as extreme to stand for the rights of the unborn, but they deserve the right to life just like you or I. And how wonderful the word he chooses to use, creative. Using your creativity, using your skills, using your ideas to make a difference. That's what we're doing with Live Action. It's all been a journey of just saying, Lord, how can we be used? God, how can we be used for your purposes? And coming up with ideas, some not so hot and some others great, idea after idea to investigate, to expose, to educate with the truth about abortion so that we can expose and open the casket on this greatest human rights abuse, that we can show the image of the aborted child in many creative ways, show that victim of abortion to the world so that they can know what is really happening. The abortion industry is full of crime. Yes, there's abortion, which causes so many deaths, but there are so many other injustices that surround it. Father Frank Pavone of Priests for Life says that in the practice of vice, in the practice of abortion, how can there be virtue? And it's so true in the abortion industry. You're not going to find human rights abuses. You're not going to find heroic acts and virtue in abortion clinics, you're going to find human rights abuses, more and more of them. So I'm going to share with you briefly some of these associated abuses that we're uncovering that destroy women, that hurt men, that hurt families along with abortion. But before that, does everyone know what happens during an abortion? Is everyone familiar with the procedure? I want to briefly describe it because I think every American, especially those of faith, those that stand for the dignity of the human person, that stand for the least of these, that we need to know the truth about what's happening by the thousands every day legally in our country. The most popular kind of abortion is the suction aspiration abortion. It's done more than any other. And it primarily kills babies that are 8 to 12 week old unborn children. At 3.5 weeks, the unborn child's heart is already beating. At 8 weeks, it has arms and legs. It has a little face. It has almost all of its internal organs. It just needs to grow and mature. So 8 to 12 week abortion. The woman goes into the clinic. She makes her appointment. Maybe the same day. In some states, they can do it the same day, or maybe 24 hours later. They'll come back for the actual abortion after they make the appointment. They go into the procedure room where the abortionist has them up on a table. They open their legs, put them between the stirrups. And the abortionist has a suction machine that's attached to a straw-like tube, a very strong plastic tube attached to a suction machine. The suction machine is 40 times as powerful as a household vacuum. And has anyone ever got a sock caught in a vacuum cleaner? I've lost socks that way. And it's powerful, vacuum cleaners. This is 40 times as powerful as a vacuum cleaner. They turn on the machine, the straw is inserted up into the woman's body, and then the abortionist turns on the suction machine and moves the straw around to collect the contents of the uterus, which is what he calls the unborn child. And once that machine is turned on, the power of that suction is so great that the tiny baby that's developing, that's probably about this big at the time, or even a little bit smaller, but that has these little arms and legs, is chopped up into little pieces along with the placenta and the amniotic fluid. And all those pieces are forced through that straw and into that plastic container, the waste receptacle container. And in a day, they might do about 30 abortions or more. And throughout that day, they'll use one or maybe two containers, and the bodies of those little children will be all together in a mess in that container, thrown together. And the abortionist might open the container occasionally to look to make sure that all the pieces are there, so that they don't leave a piece of the unborn child inside the mother. They want to make sure their work is completed. That is what's happening, has happened many times even in Orlando, where we are, happening throughout Florida, in our own home state, sometimes in our own neighborhoods. Your house might be close to an abortion clinic, but it's happening legally every 25, 23, 24 seconds in our country. But not only is that happening, but that gives rise to other abuses. So briefly, I'm going to share some of those with you. These investigative projects are meant to expose these other abuses. We do undercover work not for fun. It can seem fun at times, but it's hard because you're going into places of death. You're going into a place where you know that in the door next door to you, where you're being counseled, they're doing an abortion. They're killing a human being that has the right to life like you or I. They're people. They're small, they're unseen, but they're just as worthy to be alive. They just have just as many rights as you or I. So it can be pretty overwhelming, but with some prayers and with a lot of preparation, we do our research, we get our investigative studies done, we get our undercover police quality equipment, and then we take off and we usually do travel tours across the country. So we go to clinic after clinic. And here are some of the things that we have found. First of all, racism. Is anyone familiar with Margaret Sanger? She founded Planned Parenthood. Yeah, some of us know about her. She was a eugenicist and a racist. She basically wanted to use birth control at first and sterilization of women who were minorities or had disabilities, had problems, were poor. She wanted them not to have more children. They shouldn't be allowed to be born. Sort of like what they believed in Nazi Germany, that Jews should not procreate, that Jews should themselves be killed. That's a eugenics philosophy, a eugenicist way of thinking. Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, was friends with some of the top designers of Hitler's plan to rid Jews from Germany. She thought along those same lines, those eugenics lines. But anyways, Planned Parenthood today kills more babies than black babies than the KKK could have ever dreamed of. African American women, are about 13% of women in this country, about 13% of the population, but they're submitting to over 37% of abortions. A black woman is about 5 times as likely to have an abortion than a white woman. Why is this? Is this a coincidence? Planned Parenthood and abortion clinics and abortionists know that they can win a lot of business in black neighborhoods. So they target through their marketing and they build their clinics, the majority of them, in minority neighborhoods. And this is no accident. Margaret Sanger, who believed that there should be less blacks in America, is really fulfilling her purpose. Now, some people might say, well, this all sounds like a long stretch. I mean, don't they want the abortions anyways? Well, isn't that the best way to kill off a people group? To convince them that abortion's a great thing for them? And that they should sterilize and contracept to the point of no children? Many black leaders in the United States, in the pastoral leadership, are calling this black genocide. They're saying this is decimating the black population. In fact, the replacement rate for blacks, it's below replacement rate for their children. They're not having enough children to replace themselves. Some people say that by 2050, blacks are not going to have, there won't be enough blacks in the United States to be to make political have any political power. They're a minority now, but they will be totally irrelevant to politicians. They won't care because there will be such a small amount of them, and that's a direct result of abortion. Well, we wanted to illustrate this for the public. Our student team, we were trying to be creative and thought, well, how can we show this, get this on tape, basically? What do? Just tape a black woman walking into an abortion clinic? I mean, that might not do the trick. We want to expose this. We want to get into the inner workings of the organization. So with a friend, we did a series of phone calls to Planned Parenthood development departments where they get their money, where they make their big donations because it's also a nonprofit. And we did these phone calls, and basically we had an actor saying that he was a KKK. He was a Klansman, saying that he wanted to donate money to abort black babies, that he wanted a race-based abortion because there were too many blacks in America. Well, if you got a call like that, what would you do? You'd hang up the phone or you'd maybe call the police. Instead, Planned Parenthood, in our first day of calling, 6 different departments did not hang up the phone. Instead, they agreed to accept these racist donations or find a way to do so. Along the way, expressing agreement, oh, we understand. Yeah, you're right, there's a lot of blacks out there. Or saying that they were excited about the racist donations. I'm excited, we haven't had a request like this, so I'm excited, we'll set this right up for you. Shocking things that we taped and we put online, so that black leaders and other people could use it to educate their communities about the agendas in Planned Parenthood and how abortion is killing black children in the United States. Just an example of the racism that is alive and well. Another thing is a sexual abuse cover-up. As I mentioned earlier, Planned Parenthood covers up the sexual abuse of minor girls. There are real girls, 13, 14, that grow up and later on sue Planned Parenthood for the sexual abuse cover-up that they endured. They sue them and say, I went to you and I said my father was the man that impregnated me, and you did nothing. And I went back to a cycle of sexual abuse. Planned Parenthood makes at least $500 every surgical abortion, and up to $2,000 if it's a late-term baby. This is big money. They have a profit of $85 million, even though they're propped up by government subsidies of over $300,000. This is a lucrative business. Abby Johnson, the woman who left Planned Parenthood, the former clinic director from Texas, she said that one of the reasons she left is they were trying to sell more abortions. They were trying to manipulate women into buying more abortions, so she had to leave. Well, the Mona Lisa Project, which is our undercover statewide investigation of sexual abuse cover-up, went like this. I or another investigative partner, we'd pose as girls as young as 13 years old. So I'd get my little Hannah Montana t-shirt on from Walmart, and I'd go into the clinic, and I would say, you know, I'm 13, can I get some counseling or whatever? They'd sit me down in the counseling session, and I would say, I'm 13, you know, he's a lot older. And they'd say, we don't care, we don't want to know anything about that. And then I would still say, well, he's a lot older. You know, he's 31. What do I do? And they would say, it doesn't matter. We don't care. You know what? Just if anyone asks you, just say he's 15. Just say he's in your grade. Or they would say, if you don't want parents to find out, just have this 31-year-old man take you to this other state you know, across state lines, because in our state, I'm sorry, we have parental consent laws. So a judge has to sign off on the abortion if you don't want your parents to know, but this state doesn't. So have your boyfriend drive you over here to this other clinic that we have for the secret abortion, coming up with creative ways to bypass laws, to break laws for secret abortions of these young girls that often go back into long-time cycles of sexual abuse. Stunning things to hear an adult counselor woman usually saying to who they think is a 13-year-old girl that they don't care that the predator is over twice her age and that they'll get her the abortion. It's only $500. He can pay. You know, we take cash too. He can pay. Just a sample of the abuse that accompanies the disrespect of the unborn child. If they're willing to kill unborn children, isn't a surprise to us that they'll disrespect the dignity of their mother? Women who are such a wonderful creation, that they would disrespect them to the degree that they don't care about what happens to them after the abortion, where they go. These projects have had good results because we're trying to not only make a difference educating the public, but a political impact. So we've had legislators in different states pull money from Planned Parenthood because of these videos, attorney generals investigating because of these videos. But at the end of the day, we're back to that same statistic, 1.2 million abortions every year. The last project I want to mention briefly is the Rosa Acuna Project. Rosa Acuna was a woman from the state of New Jersey. She got pregnant unexpectedly. She didn't know what to do, so she went to her doctor. And she said, you know, doctor, what do I do? You know, if I do the abortion, would it be killing a baby if I got an abortion? And he said to her, don't be stupid, Rosa. It's not a baby. It's a blood clot. It's a bunch of cells. And so Rosa ended up having the abortion. Well, back at home, Rosa was bleeding profusely, and she didn't know why. So she went to the emergency room. There, after a series of tests, the nurse told Rosa, informed her, that she had the pieces of a baby left inside her, a little leg or a little arm. That's when Rosa realized that her first trimester pregnancy matter was not a blood clot or a bunch of cells, but it was a human being. It was her child. Well, there are millions of Rosas in our country today. Some of us in this room might even be Rosas, women that have been lied to, that don't know the full truth. And men, every time there's an abortion, that's a baby's father that was involved. Maybe he didn't know, or maybe he encouraged it, or maybe he was lied to too, but it affects everyone. And the instigators are those that politically and in these clinics lie about the dignity of the human person. They come up with euphemisms like fetus and embryo, blood clot, bunch of cells, parasite. We've heard them call the unborn child a cup of coleslaw because when it's aborted, it's small enough to fit in the cup of coleslaw. Any number of dehumanizing names to convince women to abort. But every time they lie, we want to document it. We want to show the public and then show them the truth of the unborn child, that this is a human being, so that they can say, we don't want abortion anymore. This is a human being that I'm having. Planned Parenthood hides the ultrasound from women. They hide the truth from women, the pictures from women, because they don't want them to know the truth. That's why we need to expose these injustices and show the truth. In all of this, it can get pretty overwhelming. I know for me, sometimes when I wake up, we have our live action team and our meetings, and we think, you know, this is crazy. There's still 1.2 million abortions. Abortion has been legal for over 35 years. So many people don't even seem to care. Are we ever going to win this? Are we going to see a day when these children are protected? And sometimes it can get overwhelming. But at the end of the day, I think, what greater cause or what more joyful cause than the cause for life? The greatest of all of God's creations is us. We are the most beautiful of all of God's creation. When he made every one of us, he allowed us to be conceived and he allowed us to be born into this dark time in human history, because it is a dark time. I believe it's the darkest that America has ever seen, when we're allowing this huge scale slaughter, this genocide in our own country, and people are totally blind to it. But we are born or conceived for a reason. The prophet Jeremiah said that before he was even conceived, God knew him. And before he was even born, God had a plan for his life. We are the same. When we were being created, like the psalmist David says, marvelously knit together in our mother's womb, God enjoyed so much, I'm sure, creating us in his image. He wanted us as his companions originally. And so how much does it grieve him when his image in its most vulnerable and weak state is aborted? How much must that grieve a God who's just working on creating that unborn child? But how much more will he give power and give courage to those that are willing to fight it? Those that are willing to take a stand and say, I've had enough of abortion in America. I'm going to make a difference and do something. So the first thing is prayer. Without prayer, we can do nothing. When I don't pray or I forget to pray, it's like chains are on my feet. It's like I can't, this, you know, how do we handle all of the work we're doing already? I can't do this, God. But when we're open to prayer, God can work miracles through us, and he does. There's a prayer that I try to pray every day for an end to abortion. It's called spiritual adoption. You can pray it at the end of a decade if you're praying the rosary at the end of every decade. But it goes like this. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, we love you very much. We ask you to spare the life of the unborn child, which we have spiritually adopted and is in danger of an abortion. And you can name these babies. You can give them a name, a boy or a girl. And you can pray every day that their mother will choose not to abort them. This focuses our energies and our thoughts on an individual, because the number 1.2 million can sound like a lot. But when we're focused on an individual person that's in danger of an abortion, our prayers can become more intense and more personalized. So the first thing is prayer. But beyond that, God wants warriors. God wants us to take action and to do something for his greatest of creation. St. Augustine has a beautiful quote. He says, people travel to wonder at the height of mountains. You want to go see height, you know, Mount Everest? Let's go look at it. It's so cool. They wonder at the, okay, that's cheesy. They wonder at the huge waves of the seas. People wonder at the long course of rivers, at the vast compass of the ocean, at the circular motion of the stars, and yet people pass by themselves without wondering. He's saying that we're the best. We're the most wonderful. And so when we step out in faith and say, God, I want to do something for you and for this most wonderful creation of yours, he wants to reward us so richly and so greatly. I have a friend on the Advocate team, and he sent me an email. I'd never met him before, this past year, 2009. And he wrote me a letter, and he said that he had been diagnosed with an inoperable brain tumor, and that the doctors had told him that he didn't have much longer to live. And I got this email from the stranger, and I thought, oh, how sad. But then he wrote that his dying prayers would be said for me and for all those that were fighting to end abortion. How powerful are his prayers? And we're praying for a cure for him, because I think he's going to live very long and do a lot of pro-life work. But how powerful are his prayers, rising up to heaven to a God that wants to hear them, that wants to see an end to abortion? And how powerful are we when we step out, supported by those prayers, in faith, to use our creative extremism for an end to abortion? We were made to be fighters for our faith and for the least of these. Mother Teresa says that the greatest destroyer of peace in the world today is the cry of the innocent unborn child. And she would say this. She said that when she accepted the Nobel Peace Prize. I know Obama has recently accepted that, and Al Gore and others, so I'm not sure what the Peace Prize means anymore. But the point is, she... The point is that even when she was a humble nun from Calcutta, working with the dying, with the lepers, with the lonely, she, whenever she had the opportunity, and before that Nobel Peace Prize, when she was accepting the prize, they were mostly pro-abortion. They were mostly pro-choice. But she was unafraid everywhere she went to say, if you want peace in the world, do away with abortion. Because the greatest destroyer of peace is that unborn child's cry that cannot be heard, that is not heard. We have a lot of work to do. But I know that by God's strength, we can see a day in America when there is no more abortion.
Yes, right.
That's right. If people of faith... if people of faith rise up and say, we're done, and through God's strength and with our courage, we will step forward and we'll end this thing, I believe we will see an end to abortion. I want to close from a great verse from St. Paul in Galatians 6:9 some words for us about this fight that we're in. He says, "Let us never weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up." Let's go get it done. Thank you so much for having me. I want to say one last thing really quickly. This is The Advocate. This is a student magazine for students by students, mostly college focused. We're trying to get this to every single college campus. We're at over 50 colleges and high schools now, but I'm sure there are many colleges here that are unrepresented. It's pro-life. It has cutting-edge research, facts, pictures. They're at the door, and if you're involved in a faith group or in your pro-life group and you want to bring it to your campus, please get in touch with me. We want to build this coalition. And also, if you write or you design or you edit videos or you do anything, and if you have any skill, pretty much, contact us. Even if you bake cookies, you can send those to us. Contact us, because we're building a team, a nationwide coalition, and we want you to be a part of it. Thank you so much.
This talk was brought to you by FOCUS, the Fellowship of Catholic University Students. If you would like to listen to more talks, please visit us at www.focusequip.org.